Have you ever felt frustrated because you just couldn't find a lovely book to read? I can start to crave not just a good book, but a book that draws me in and evokes such a deep emotion that I can say, wow, that was a lovely book. Welcome, friends. This is Emmy B on Lovely Books Podcast, where it's my job to highlight the lovely books that keep you reading and connect you to the world. If you're new to Lovely Books, this podcast is more than just a best books podcast. It's about the reader's experience and takeaway. No book reviews, no analysis of literary content, just thoughts and personal anecdotes brought to our minds by the characters and subject matter that we love. That's what brings the book to life for you. I hope we give you something to think about, something to laugh about, and something lovely to read. Welcome to another episode of Lovely Books Podcast. In this episode, Melissa Henderson will discuss the lovely book, The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. Melissa, thank you so much for being here today.
Sure.
And for bringing us this lovely book. Before we begin, would you like to please introduce yourself?
Sure. Well, something interesting about me, my name is actually Melissa Miller, not Melissa Henderson. I never took my husband's last name when we got married 15 years ago, but people in our community just refer to us as the Hendersons, even though that is my husband and children's last name, but my last name is Miller. So I grew up here in the Salt Lake Valley in East Mill Creek and in Sandy. I went to the University of Utah, where I earned a degree in sociology because I was certain I was going to be a social worker, yet somehow along the way ended up in finance, full-time in finance. I have two kids, Lucy and JJ. Lucy is 9, almost 10, and JJ just turned 7.
Excellent. And me and Melissa have been neighbors for like 10 years. So
a decade.
Yeah, right? It's good fun. So I'm going to talk a little bit about The Hate U Give, just kind of give us a little brief idea. The Hate U Give is Angie Thomas's debut novel. It's about a teenage girl who grapples with racism, police brutality, and activism after witnessing her Black friend murdered by the police. The book became an immediate young adult bestseller and was adapted into a movie. Now, I had to look into this because it was never actually on the big screen. It's adapted to a movie that was not, I don't know if Netflix made it.
I actually don't know. I didn't realize it had never been in theaters.
Yeah, it had never been in theaters. But it was adapted to a movie shortly after it was released. I listened to this at the end of summer, and I listened to it as my first ever audiobook. Wow. The narrators in this book are incredible. I am an audiobook lover for life now. So I was so excited about that. And the female voice for Star Carter, she actually won a bunch of awards. Wow. That you can win for audiobooks, like the equivalent of an Academy Award for an actress in a movie. She won for her voice as Star Carter in this audiobook. But her emotion and her voice and her honesty and feeling from the audiobook really had Star Carter's words echoing in my ears for a long time. I'd just be minding my own business, and I would just, in my mind, hear justice for Khalil, justice for Khalil. So the book really affected me. I'm really drawn to reading about experiences that I don't have experience with, and taking something that is really common in the news right now and reading about it in this format was really meaningful to me. One thing you might not know about Angie Thomas is that she is releasing a novel in January of 2021. It's called Concrete Rose, and it's the story of Maverick Carter.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. So it'll be out in about a month and a half, and it's the story of Star's father. So
that's going to be great.
Yes. And the movie rights have already been purchased for that, and that one will actually make it to the big screen.
Wow.
So super, super cool. And good timing.
Such a great time for that topic. Like you mentioned, it is everywhere in our lives right now.
Yeah, definitely. So do you want to start off by giving us kind of a brief summary of The Hate U Give?
Well, like you said, it is about a teenage girl who's grappling with racism and police brutality. She lives in these two worlds. One is her fancy prep school that she goes to, and it's predominantly white. And the other is her poor neighborhood that is predominantly Black. And so she has to do something called code switching, which she's always going back and forth between her two personalities, her prep school personality and her home neighborhood personality. So you see the challenges she faces with that, never really being able to be herself, always having to be on guard, making sure she doesn't talk with too much slang or doesn't give anyone reason to think she's angry at her prep school, but then having to talk about slang and having passion in her home neighborhood. She also grapples with the need to speak up about injustice. You know, she doesn't want to be noticed. She wants to kind of fly under the radar, but she's so torn up about what happened to her friend being unjustly murdered because of his skin color. So it's just fascinating reading about her, and the author does such a good job bringing her to life. I feel like after I read this book, I was like thinking about her still and wondering, like, I wonder where Star is now. I wonder how she's doing now. And then I have to remind myself, oh, this is a fictional character.
Yeah.
But the author just brings all of these characters to life so wonderfully. And she, I think a really good book helps you to empathize with a situation you've never experienced, kind of like you mentioned. And she does this. I mean, you are in Star's shoes in this book, feeling what she feels and just empathizing so much with what she's grappling with. And that's one of the reasons I think everyone should read this book. I think this should be a must read book for junior high, especially in white communities where we have so much privilege that we don't encounter this stuff. And this book helps you to feel it.
Right. And I think the contrast that you brought up between how Star behaves in her upper class prep school versus how she behaves in her neighborhood can be really eye-opening for us, because even though we might not relate with her hood, we may relate closer to her prep school atmosphere, and understanding her as a character and how she has to change opens that world up for us.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think that's really cool. I know this is a really meaningful book for you. Can you kind of tell us what other aspects of this book maybe strike a personal chord with you?
Well, the first time I read this book was a couple of years ago, and I loved it. I thought it was such an important book. I was telling everyone, you have to read it. But then I read it again just recently, because I knew that was the book I wanted to discuss with you, but I wanted it to be fresh. So I read it again, and honestly, it hit me so much more personally this time. There were actually points in this book that I was getting like physically emotional, you know, like my heart was racing and I was on the verge of tears. I'm not naive enough to think that this police brutality hasn't always been an issue, but I think didn't affect my daily life. And so I could be like, oh, that's terrible, and then keep bebopping along. But mm-hmm. with the pandemic and how much time we've had to really focus on things, just seeing, you know, Ahmaud Arbery that was killed while exercising. I mean, he was out running. Yeah. And then Breonna Taylor in her own home. And then George Floyd for passing a counterfeit $20 bill was killed on the street, and he was calling out for his mom. It just, you no longer, I felt like I no longer had the option to bebop along. Like, I had to really address these issues. And Josh and I, my husband, we decided to talk to our kids about it, make sure they understood the importance of this and what was going on in the world. And both of my kids are adopted, and my daughter is white and my son is Black. And when we were talking to him about George Floyd, sorry, this is actually really emotional for me, he just started sobbing. And he said, but Mom, I'm brown. I don't want to die. And it was just like at that moment, I thought, I can't ignore this. This is important to all of us. But this is my child. This is his safety. This is his well-being. And rereading this book about how she has to code switch between her two worlds, her white world and her Black world. And I just thought, that's going to be my son. Right now, he just turned 7. He's only in first grade, so he hasn't encountered a lot of this, but he will. I mean, in the next few years, he'll have to deal with some of these things that she dealt with, and it made it so much rawer to me when I read it the second time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely an interesting world that we're living in. And the timing for when I read it was right on. It was right during all the George Floyd stuff. So I really did sort of feel, and I think that's why Justice for Khalil echoed in my mind. Because whenever I encountered news about what was happening with this news story, I did think back to this, and it was a more palpitating feeling. In this book, one thing, the family dynamics are another part that I found to be really interesting and really can be really eye-opening. You have all these different characters, and the families are very mixed. You've got stepbrothers, stepsisters, best friends. You've got, you know, all these different people, and Star grew up being babysat at Khalil's grandmother's house. And then Star has a stepbrother named 7, and 7 has a half-sister named Kenya. And so you have these half-sibling relationships that develop and change over the course of the story because of what is happening. How would you define family?
Well, that's one thing that I think is so interesting about this book, because society may look at that sort of familial arrangement and think it's not traditional or it's not normal, in air quotes. But the thing about that family arrangement is it lends itself to a greater family support system. I mean, you saw how Garden Heights, the whole community was a family. You know, it wasn't just you and your siblings and your parents. It was like your next door neighbor was watching out for you, and the shop owner across the street had your back. Like, there was this larger family. And so community becomes your family. It wasn't just this insular little group of, you know, a handful of people. But my idea of family is quite broad. You know, there's the family you grew up with. There's, and that can be through biology or through adoption, obviously, through your family. There's family that comes from your community, but there's also, as you get older, the family you choose. You know, the people you want to live your life with, and those can be your friends or anyone. You know, you get to decide who that family is to you, and I think there's something really beautiful about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love in this story how, as Devante isn't related to Star or Khalil or Kenya or anyone, but, you know, your example that you just gave is a perfect example of what the community did to come together to save this teenaged kid who was in trouble. You know, and not having such strict family boundaries really facilitated that. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. I mean, I don't remember exactly what the language was, but at the very end of the book, he's talking to Star's uncle, and he basically says, like, well, of course you're going to stay with us. You're part of our family. And I love that. I mean, they didn't know that kid at all in the beginning, but they just took him in, helped him out, and he became part of their family. Yeah. And it was just a given, like, yeah, you're one of us now.
It was such a cool part of the story. And I think it also helped us see that depending on what you have access to in terms of stable environment, it can really change the outcome of your life.
Absolutely.
Another big theme in this is racism and activism. The character who really stands out to me with this one is Star's best friend, Haley. Through the course of the story, we learn that she's very racist, but she's so afraid.
She's afraid of defining differences. She's afraid of neighborhoods whose culture she doesn't understand. She really becomes an example of what I sort of think of as passive racism. And, you know, there's so many nonfiction books available right now that talk more about White Fragility, How to Be an Anti-Racist, Stamped, which is co-authored by one of my favorite children's authors, Jason Reynolds.
And I feel like this fictional novel did an equally good job about explaining. So do you have any personal experience? First of all, I just have to tell listeners how cute JJ is. Like, if you just picture the spunky little...
He is so full of energy and,
life and joy.
That is the funniest things.
He is just, he's so rad. And your daughter is rad. Her personality is different than his.
Very different.
But he is just like, I mean, he just seems like the kid at the playground who's going to make friends with every single kid there. And he's going to make sure that they all know he's there. And yes. They all know his name is JJ. Yes. So with him at such a young age, have you had experiences?
I have had a couple of experiences. One I had when he was very young. He was a toddler. We were at the park and this man was there with his grandchildren. And he came over and just started chatting like you do with people whose kids are playing around your kids. And he was asking me about JJ. People don't realize my daughter's adopted because she's white, but it's obvious with JJ. He has two white parents. Mm-hmm. So immediately this man zoned in on that and was asking me about JJ's adoption story. And in the end, he wanted to compliment me. And he said something along the lines of, I just think it's so great what you've done to rescue him from those people. Jaw drop, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, those people? What are you talking about? And the man, I think like everyone who has biases and is racist, you would never admit that. They don't think they are.
No.
I thought he was giving me a compliment. And I was so offended. Like, how can you call them those people? And what did he need to be rescued from? Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a rich cultural heritage that we're teaching him to be proud of. I would never act like we rescued him. And by the way, with adoption, like his birth mother gave us an incredible gift. She made us a family. I would never be so inappropriately bold as to be like, oh, I saved him from her. I mean, I thought that was so offensive. And then another time when he was a couple years older, and quite frankly, I'm lucky I haven't been banned from Chick-fil-A for this. We were getting some food and JJ and my daughter were in the little playground area playing, and JJ and a few other boys that were around his age started getting real physical, not in an aggressive, mean way, but they were wrestling, you know,
like, as boys do,
as boys do. And I saw it and I was kind of like, okay, I better go tell him to chill out. We don't know these boys, you know, it's too weird that he's wrestling with strangers. But as I stand up to go in there, an elderly gentleman, who is these two boys' grandfather, beat me to it. And he opens the door. And instead of talking to all of the boys that were wrestling, because it was actually my son, my nephew, and then these two other boys. So instead of talking to all four boys, he zoned in on JJ, who was like three or four at the time, and was yelling at him. Was like in JJ's face, yelling at him, like, who do you think you are? You're so aggressive. You're a bad kid. You shouldn't be in here. I was furious. I mean, it was so obvious that he was blaming JJ because he was black. He just had this snap judgment that he's black, he must be the aggressor. Mm-hmm. And I lost my marbles. I went in there and I got up in his face and I was yelling at him. And I'm not going to lie, I was dropping all sorts of expletives. And he was like, oh, anyway, I don't need to get into it, but he was so mad. He had his fist balled up, like he was so physically angry. And so I started taunting him and saying, are you going to hit me? Is that where we're going? Are you going to hit me? Anyway, it was so bad. I couldn't go back there for like months because I was so embarrassed.
I mean, I have to laugh at this story because I love you, Melissa. But at the same time, like, I do have to balk at the ridiculousness of feeling that much energy towards a child.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yes. It was so unfounded. I think anyone else that I know that's in my world would have gone in there and been like, hey, kids, calm down. This is rough. And that would have been it.
Right.
But for him to go in there and get in my young child's face and like shaking his fist, pointing his, it was infuriating because you knew he would not have escalated to that level if it was a white child. He would not. He would have given that kid the benefit of the doubt.
Right. So have you had to Star talks about a point in her life when her parents talked to her about if you get pulled over.
Yes.
If a police officer stops you. Have you thought about that with JJ?
I had that talk with both of my kids. I think it's probably too early because they're really not, they're young enough. They're really not out of my sphere of influence very often, on their own, but I still felt like, you know what, this is a conversation we're going to have over and over through the years as they have varying degrees of understanding. Mm-hmm. So when George Floyd was killed, that was the point I said, we need to start having this conversation. And I didn't want to single my son out. So I said, we're just going to talk to both of our kids about this. And
I think that's great. That's actually, I love that perspective.
Yeah. And we just told him, this is how you act around police officers. There are a lot of really good policemen and women, but you never want to escalate the situation when you're dealing with a police officer. So you always talk with respect. You say, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. You keep your hands where they can see them. It was crazy and eye-opening to feel like I needed to have that conversation with them, but that's our reality.
Definitely. There's so many different messages in this book. And they're all beautifully mapped together. If you could give this an overarching theme, what do you think that would be? What do you think the message Angie Thomas had for us?
I would say the main theme was standing up against injustice, using your voice to speak out against what you see that's wrong around you. Mm-hmm. I also think she had some sub themes too that were really beautiful. One thing that I really got a kick out of was how Star's family always prays to Black Jesus. Awesome. Like, it's not a given, like it's not implied he's Black. They actually call him Black Jesus in the book. And I just loved that they were taking something that was important, but they were not relying on a white power or a white ideal. Like within their sphere, they were worshiping something that gave them power, but he was Black Jesus. I just loved that. And I also loved in Garden Heights, all the streets were named after things in a garden, like flowers and trees. And obviously the author is a big fan of Tupac. And I found out that she actually did that. That was like an ode to his poem, The Rose That Grew From Concrete. And it's about how you can take the worst situation ever, I mean, concrete, and in a tiny crack, without any tending, without any nutrition, a beautiful rose can grow. And that's a theme about this. Garden Heights was a tough neighborhood, but they still found a way to make family and have community and love and support and to thrive in this really tough environment. Mm-hmm. So I think that was one of her kind of sub themes.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned before, books that you think kids should read. So this book is like super banned. I'm going to say it's the language. I'm going to give the universe the benefit of the doubt and say that it's the language.
Yeah.
But it's not. But I'm going to say it is. This new book, when interviewed about it, the story of Maverick Carter, before it's even been released, Angie Thomas has said, I know this book is going to be banned. And it's going to be banned as hard, if not harder, than The Hate U Give. But I have a running list of books with my kids that I insist they read as part of their education to be good humans. A Long Walk to Water is on that. My Name is Malala is on that. Some of them are scary and intense and about war and about privilege and about kindness and about differences. Would you put this book in one of those categories for essential reads for kids?
Absolutely. I would say older kids, though.
Older kids, yeah.
Some, because of the language and the subject matter, I mean, that it's pretty intense. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's something they need to be exposed to, they need to be aware of, and it lends itself to then you having discussions with them.
Oh, yeah.
Talking them through this and helping them form their perspectives. So for older kids, I would say absolutely high school, maybe even junior high. It is a must read.
So I always let our podcast guests leave another book recommendation, something else that you've liked. It can be like this book similar to this or something completely different, but just something that you've read recently that you loved and you'd love to recommend.
Okay. I read a book just last month that I loved, and it is a book that does have some controversy because it's written by a white author about a Mexican experience. So I get that controversy, but it was so good. And it's called American Dirt by Janine Cummings. And it's about this woman who's trying to escape from Mexico to America to escape violence. Her life's been threatened by a cartel. So she's trying to get across the border. And I never had any idea what that experience was like. I really thought the difficulty in that journey was like how much walking they had to do. I had no idea the violence and extortion and the horrible conditions they face. And I read this book and I just felt like, let them all in. If they will make that trek, they deserve to be here because they are desperate. People that make that journey to cross illegally into our country, they are desperate. And that deserves our compassion at the very least. But it was such a good book, such an eye-opening book.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
This was good fun.
Thanks again for joining us on this episode of Lovely Books. We'd love to hear from you and your thoughts on today's episode, so please hop over to our Instagram page, lovelybooks_podcast, and leave your thoughts there. If you liked what you heard today, please remember to comment, like, subscribe, and leave a review. We hope you'll join us again next week when we highlight another lovely book.